There's no amount of money, no amount of achievement, no amount of travel, no amount of like alone time could make me feel like safe, could make me feel like, and I had that realization. Like there was this big thing. The only thing that would set me free is the truth, which is sharing.
Welcome to Finding Your Spark Again. I am so glad to have with me here Kalpashree Gupta. She is a public speaker, writer, coach, and consultant, and she is CEO of Next Group, helping clients build trust and create awareness for leaders who have used their achievements to deflect from dealing with trauma. She experienced childhood sexual abuse, and her vision for this world is to transform and heal so billions of people can reclaim their personal power, use their voice, and create a kinder world. And I am so glad to have you here today, Kalpa.
Hi, Donna Lynn. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Yes, I feel like this is going to be a great topic for us, for our audience, because there is a power to the way that you speak about recovering that is really different from the way I hear most people talk about trauma and recovery from trauma and reclaiming that inner power. So I'd love to sort of dive right in there.
Yeah, you know, so for benefit of everyone and you, like we were briefly chatting, I was sexually abused from when early childhood, probably 3, 4, 5 years up until like 20, close to 20 years. So that's like over a period of 16 years. And I didn't share about that until in my mid 30s, when one day in a global role, I was leading a global role in product. I had a team. I worked till late at night at 2 a.m. in the morning. Next day at 5 p.m. after an interaction, I resigned, right? And I come home and my parents were there. My husband was there. Through that discovery process, I realized that I was storing a lot of trauma in my body. And I was a young mom. Like my mom, I was 38 then. And my son was about 5 years old. What I uncovered is I used to think this is a thing of the past. And the shadows of the trauma followed me along. But here I am like 5 years from now, and I will tell you that it's possible to shift, it's possible to claim, and it's possible to reclaim that child, right? And in my life, that was made possible when I looked at my son one day. I can't remember whether I was breastfeeding or sleeping, like we co-slept for a number of years, whether I was looking at him. And I thought to myself, if something were to happen to him, would it be his fault? No. So why are we so hard on us? Why do we have that relationship with us that we are like so above everybody else that we've got to hold ourselves to this high standard, like, and forget that we were children, you know, children who were supposed to be protected and were not, for whatever, not from a shame or blame or guilt perspective, but just purely just our parents. In my case, my parents were there. They were a loving family, but they missed some things, you know? And my trauma also made me amazingly, you know, like resilient, right? Perceptive, you know, I don't let a day go by where I don't count my blessings, the things that are going well in life. And you could still find me making, you know, just lying on the snow and just having fun like a child, you know? So, and that's why I'm here, that I'm passionate about this topic, because we get to, you know, the things that happen to us, they don't need to define us in terms of our lowest point in life. But in my case, I have the opportunity to use that to actually create a kinder world where my son, hopefully 50 or 30 or 40 years from now, we are not living with statistics where people don't share their trauma for more than half of their life, particularly around childhood sexual abuse. Because if we as powerful adults can't speak about it, how do we expect children, you know, and then all the trauma and then the abuse that thrives in, you know, silence.
Yeah, that is an incredible story. And you know, today we're talking about the first part of what we're talking about is that overcoming shame. And I hear no shame in you at this moment, but sexual abuse can really twist our minds about what part is the child's fault and what part is not the child's fault, which, as far as I'm concerned, none of it is the child's fault. But there gets to be this real like cloud of shame that children and even adults who get into these situations where there's abuse feel like they caused this, even though it is not theirs. Can you talk a little bit about shame and what that does, and what the process maybe of being able to start to release some of that is?
So I'll talk about the process to release, and I will also share what actually contributes to why collectively it's still such a taboo topic. And I feel like it's our lack of willingness sometimes to talk about things that makes it even worse, but not from a shame or blame perspective, but like every time we talk about this focus on the victim, right? Like the child, like what happened. But I also say, what about the abuser? You know, like, and like, what an opportunity, what was going on in their lives that they did what they did? And spiritually, like, sometimes I came to this space where I realized what my abusers were doing was not to me. Like, it was, they had something that was going on, they were acting out, and I happened to be that child who encountered that. Right. I've had conversations with my abuser, but bringing back to the process, for me, the process was essentially all my coping mechanisms stopped working. And I say that my coping mechanism was hypervigilance, control, achievement. You know, I was a very shy child, and I didn't speak English until a number of years later, like when I moved to another space, another city from where I grew up in Eastern India. And I was like constantly, I was a good student, like, okay, after this, I get this job, and then I do this. And then when I moved to the US, it was one after the other, you know, things. And you become like, we somehow are titled, the money, the, you know, we follow the script. Okay, I get married, I have a child, and I have a perfect life. Everything is going well, except you can't freaking figure out why I don't want to trust the nanny. I know it, but I don't want to have somebody take care of my child. Or as I'm watching the child, like the first month, my parents are around and I don't want anyone to hold my baby. I just want to watch it. Just want to be there, right? So I think when I say that, you know, like in my case, it was coping mechanism just stopped working. Like my achievement, there's no amount of money, no amount of achievement, no amount of travel, no amount of like alone time could make me feel like safe. Could make me feel like, and I had that realization. Like there was this big thing. The only thing that would set me free is the truth, which is sharing. I think I got to that path. And then I realized that that is indeed the case. Because now when I share, you know, it happened and I'm alive. And I'm alive to the point which I don't recommend many people. I went into LinkedIn and I made like a public post about it when I went through like, you know, process. But I knew my purpose. You know, I knew that for me it was important. If I worked in financial services for so many years, and if and money has power, right? If there are so many powerful people, and I know people even within the industry or within my network where that have experience, and they are not ready to share, talk about it. And my hypothesis was, what if I start sharing and there's a movement that starts, and eventually there's this powerful group which starts sharing and we break down that trauma. And even if not many people come public, but they understand the patterns of their trauma, right? And that's, so for me, that's been the process, like, which is like coping mechanism doesn't work. From a resource perspective, it's the breath work, forgiving myself, right? Writing a lot of letters, journaling. We will probably run out of time, Donalyn, like talking about the things that I've invested on, right? But it's in long story short, it's forgiving yourself, right? Writing, doing, and journaling, and some form of like reflection, whether it's meditation, breath work, that brings me back to my body and goes, I am safe in this moment. There is so much going well in my life, and I choose, end of the day, I choose to give no power to the thing that happened, because that's basically, and that was the process for me. A lot of like cycling, but sometimes, you know, there were process where it was just, it was not a straight line, I can tell you that.
Yeah, life rarely is a straight line, isn't it? You asked yourself, or you found in you, what is my power? What is my mission with this? What am I going to do with this thing that is in me that feels awful? And that ability to bring it up and out is rare. It's really a hard thing to do. And to be able to sort of open all of this silence, right? All of that throat that is the silence of a child takes a lot of work.
It does.
You know, because. I mean, anyone who's been through situations where their life depends upon, or they feel that their life depends upon, their ability to stay silent is in real trouble when it comes to like, now let's talk about it. Now let's try to heal.
And I think that's where we create some of the patterns around, you know, like undermining ourselves, right? Like having low self-worth, like who am I to, or it must be my fault, like overcompensating for other, you know, other people's mistakes sometimes. And those patterns, they carried on for me, at least in my work too, you know, like there would be sometimes people coming up to me and speaking to me and saying how, like that seemed odd. And I'm like, no, that person is that way. I would make excuses, right? And until I realized one day that what about that grace that I give to other people? Where is that for me? Like if I as a leader can learn, and I am, you know, in all situations, I'm looking at, you know, what can I learn? Like, what about me? Like, who gets to speak for me? Who gets to advocate for me, right? So I think it's hard for a lot of people to get there. I get that. If one is in one of these situations, I think a good start is to just pouring all your emotions in a piece of paper, right? If especially like, I'm hoping anyone who's listening and they're feeling like there's no, you know, light at the end of the tunnel, I hope the story like changes them. Like, go write, find a piece of paper, like pour all your emotions. Like, in fact, get a piece of your childhood picture and then say all the mean things you say to yourself. Try saying that to that child. I bet you like that it will change, because once we sometimes forget our inner thoughts, they are sometimes the same from that childhood until now. When you realize, oh my God, I was being so mean to myself. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, that has actually shifted, and that even today I find myself sometimes in those situations, and then I go back and say, you know what? I get to rebuild all of that.
Yeah, there's so much power in the questions that you're asking. And that the images that you're bringing up, right? Being able to speak to your child. And what's so interesting is that I have never heard anyone talk about talking to their inner child the way you just did. And I have heard a lot about this topic, right? So normally the ways in which we interact with our youth, right? We try to go back and have some relationship to that child is to ask that child what they need, right? But you didn't do that. You talked about actually speaking the way you speak in your head and try to say that to a child. Try, go ahead, see what changes. That is so powerful. That is so powerful, Kalpa. And the other thing that really struck me about what you're talking about is speaking the unspeakable, right? Whether you're writing it down, but name the names, right? Really speak that unspeakable piece of it. Because once it's past our throat, then there's some room for our hearts to open up.
Yeah. And self-expression, I think part of what gets sometimes killed is the self-expression, right? And part of claiming up that power is that self-expression. Whether And it's not always like going and telling somebody. Sometimes, like, I think what's hurtful in this process, Donalyn, I've realized is how many times I have abandoned myself, like second guessing, here's what, like, there's a voice that's like choking, like, you know, like I want to say something and I'm not saying because I'm afraid, or I'm like, I can't, I'm so afraid that I can't even, like, let alone telling somebody, I'm afraid to even say it out loud. A good start could be writing it out loud. Maybe you burn the paper, piece of paper after that, but just there's a tremendous amount of power, you know, like a release that happens when we actually start to witness our own, that inner truth, you know, and our heart is like, people say that, I've heard many times, you know, like that, I don't know how to, like, I don't know if I'll ever get there. And I believe everybody can get there. It's our willingness to choose a little differently. It's our willingness to be like, okay, do I want, what if it's my last day tomorrow? At least this question has helped me. What if it's my last day tomorrow? What would I regret? Like, even like, we all have our moments, you know, before coming to a podcast, before writing an article, before giving a big speech or something. Who am I? But does it really matter? Like, if you yourself can share that story for your own purpose and know that you listen to it, that's all that matters. Maybe somebody else will listen, it'll save their life, but the self-expression is so critical.
You really bring to mind how in the moment you be with that, right? Because doing something for other people, expressing yourself for other people to hear it is a very different goal than expressing yourself to express yourself, right? It's a painter, right? So if you're a painter, all the painters I know anyway, are there with the canvas and the color, and they're doing what they're doing, and no one else exists. No one else is there with them, right? And later, people may say, oh, I like that. I'd like to have that, right? That's very different than who was in the moment of creation.
It's a from a simple process perspective, it's anything, like any creation for me, it's like us witnessing, right? Me thinking about it, then maybe going to a small group that I trust. They may not be immediate family or immediate like people I work with, but somebody, maybe it's a stranger, like some trust, and then creating that community where you feel like seen and heard, right? That's sort of how most creative processes work, and I feel like the same works in also in a little bit of claiming our own power, that like, 'cause we have tremendous power, right? We have that in us. Like, I know that when my son, it's, I'll share a funny story around like our power and how our brain is wired to focus on the negativity bias, and which keeps us from witnessing a lot of joy. Even yesterday, me and my son, we went to Barnes and Noble, we were buying something, and he came running, like he showed me some gift that he wanted to buy for himself. And I said, okay, let's buy. And then we went to HEB and we were buying some school supplies. This was, today is his first day back to school. And then I was looking for some particular plastic cups, and he just kept showing me something else. And I'm like, this is not what we want. This is why I wanted you to stay home. And the next thing, then he goes and he finds something that he was looking for. And I said, thank you. And then he comes to me, mommy, but you were telling me right a few minutes ago that this is why you don't want to bring me. See, you don't like me. And then he got stuck on that point. And it was so profound for me. I was like, Aryan, I was like praising you before that. And here's what we did. Here are all the 10 things we do. But your brain is focused right now in that one thing, right? And that's not just my child. I'm not sharing that because of the child. I'm sharing that that is how we are in our day to day. You know, like there's so much that is going on, and we are just stuck on that one thing that happened like 10 years, 20, 30 years ago. I'm not saying that that thing didn't define you, or it didn't change, or you didn't have hardships, but maybe it's time to let go.
Yeah, that is how the human brain works. That is how it works. And it's good that it works that way, but it does not serve us in this evolution of our lifestyle. So there's times that it does and times that it doesn't. And whether you have lost someone or lost a job or lost identity or lost a childhood, you know, all of that is not here. It's not right now. Of course, there's healing to do, but it's not now. And so this really is a great segue into how do we get from I had this trauma. Now I've found my voice. I've done some healing. I have a way to express myself. I have a way to process my feelings around it. You even talked about going so far as to really forgive or understand in compassion your abuser, which is a very big turn from being the abused, right? But how do we get from there to, okay, now I'm ready to feel real happiness, real joy?
And I think the process, the key process in that is the ability to forgive yourself, right? The ability to forgive myself. Once I know that I am whole, like I shared that example of my child, like something were to happen to him, it's not going to be his fault. So why am I being hard on myself? If something like what, if I continue to live like that and he finds out later, like what, and what if I die tomorrow and something happens to him? Like, what would I want him to know? Right. So at some point you come to realize maybe it's not a life or death situation. For me, it was a little bit. I think one of my abusers passed away when my son was, and in the immediate family, when my son was around less than two. And that opened a lot of series of things for me, going a little sense of like guilt and deep shame, and then also grief for that person because they were somebody I knew, and we have all these mixed emotions about people, right? And in this case, they left behind a child, and I knew that person's dream beyond like the abuse part, right? So it was, I don't know, I think some of the series of things that have happened, like of people losing people in my life that you could probably relate to that. You go deep and you're like, oh my God, this can't be the end. Like I am still blessed with this life and I get to live this life, right? So I think that probably led me to just going, you know, I don't want to hold somebody's, you know, like anger or blame for somebody. I don't want to take that to my grave. And then eventually it took me some time. So even some of the other abusers who were alive, I did have conversations with them, and that how I was able to get to that is that sheer compassion in me. I think that enabled me to have that compassion for other people. Because when I realized that I am whole and I'm okay and I am completely in my power and I can still have fun, I can still sing, I love, you know, all of the fine things in life, then everything else doesn't matter. And yeah, I think that's how I got there. And in this process, what I realized is, as I started sharing the stories, my mom in her 60s shared with me that she was also abused. And if I hadn't shared that, I wouldn't know that this is also like I knew conceptually that it's a transgenerational trauma, intergenerational trauma, but I didn't know that about my family. And now I have a much deeper relationship. We are very open in the family. And she was abused by a music teacher at some point. And she started her music in her 60s. I mean, she loved singing. So for me, all that is worth it.
That gift of trauma, right? How we come out the other side different, enhanced somehow, and with a real understanding of what does an open heart unconditionally feel like. Yeah, incredible, incredible, incredible. You brought up this moment, which I do really relate to, of understanding that you're alive. Now, there are lots and lots of ways that people come to this moment, but certainly after my husband passed away, it was one of the first things that happened for me was like, I still have literally a heartbeat. That was where it started for me to say, like, wait a minute, now what's the difference between he and I? He is not physical anymore. I don't have a belief system that says he's gone. So I had to have a new definition of how do I relate to this? I have a heartbeat. I have a body. Oh, that was a new understanding, right? But once I got that, I could really get to this idea of being fully present, which really is the only place that joy exists.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, like, and you brought up something super important, which is being present in our bodies, because with trauma, we stop being in our bodies. Like, I had stopped being in my body. Like, we are so into our head or everywhere else, either past or future, that the present moment that we are breathing, like I am, you know, my fingers are here, my feet are touching the ground, or if I'm going go out, I can feel the sun, like, and in that moment, everything feels abundant. It is that just knowing that we are in our body, we are experiencing life through our bodies. So I believe fundamentally, you know, in experiencing joy through life's ups and downs is our purpose.
Yes, I do too. Beautifully said. I would love for our audience to be able to get in touch with you. What have you got going on that you'd like to share?
I'm most excited about two things. One, I'm hosting a retreat end of September here in Austin, really for anyone who's feeling they are in transition, overworked, and or, you know, trying to figure out what's my strategy, what's next. So come join me. Like, it's a beautiful, only 15 to 20 women. And it's a relatively small exclusive event here in Austin, September 28th through October 2nd. And I'll share more information on that folks can find on my website. So that's super exciting because, you know, this is what I do. Like, this is my living and this is my purpose, because I want to create that shame-free space for whatever is going on in their life. No judgment, right? Like, and sometimes it's we think when we are in our silos working that we are the only one, and that couldn't be far away from the truth, right? And just be present, you know, have some silence time, have some daily workshops, and be around a community of women that are supporting each other. So that's, I'm super excited about. The other is my book is launching. I'm writing a chapter in a multi-author book called Going Places. And I couldn't have picked a better time. It's going to be around the dates that I will be at the retreat. So there'll be a little celebration of that book launch as well. Beyond that, I am a public speaker as well as coach one-on-one. That's my passion. I love working with women in their career and business. I've done a lot of work in my own healing, but I'm not a therapist or counselor. I partner with them, if, you know, when people want to process their past, but I'm more forward moving, you know, what helping them write the next chapter, right? And helping them transform and heal and really create the quality of relationships that that can really unleash a lot of joy in our life.
That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing all that. Of course, we'll have it all linked so you can go onto whatever platform you're on and find that and just click. And I encourage you to do so. It sounds like a very fun retreat and a great way to connect and find healing and joy. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here today, and I look forward to seeing you next time.